All right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And to John.
Are our volumes correct, Mason?
I don't know. I can't hear anything.
Atta baby. Okay, cool. Well, my headset's all screwed up, so I'm just going to go ahead and take it off for today.
Right. Somebody broke it this
I'm
morning.
I'm tired of that crap. It's useless. All right, welcome to Cowtown Studio, brought to you courtesy of Cowtown Range. And our good friends over at AR500 Armor. No, I don't want it, Adam. I'm fine.
I think what you forgot to say.
I'm in the middle of
my
intro.
What you forgot to say in that was,
what?
Hey, you're on the Arms Room show from Cowtown Studios, brought to you by Cowtown Range and our good friends over at AR500 Armor.
Thanks, John.
Be sure to check them out at AR500Armor.com.
Thank you, John. Thank you, John.
You're welcome, buddy.
Mason had me distracted.
I know. I got your back,
yeah,
though, bro.
Yeah, I do that.
I hate my heart.
I got your back, pal.
All right. I woke up this morning to snow.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm from up north, so.
Oh, okay.
North-ish.
North-ish.
Middle north.
Not all the way north. All the way north has even more snow than we did, but it was awesome. So I got to, you know, play in snow a little bit with my kids before I came down. So it was good times.
Yay.
Good times. So as we get started here, we can't not talk briefly, okay? Because, I mean, we could do a whole show on why it happened or whatever, but we got to mention the whole Paris thing.
What?
Yeah. Here's my opinion. Okay.
All right.
Get ready,
oh,
listeners.
Lord. Rant mode on.
Yeah, rant mode
engage.
On. No, I'm actually going to go mild on the rant today. Yeah, probably bullshit. But
okay.
Okay. The problem is that, and this is my opinion, all right? I believe France has set their citizens up for this stuff. And they're going to continue to set their citizens up for this stuff as long as they don't allow them to be armed. They create a passive environment. They allow a certain type of people with certain types of beliefs into their country. Not only allow them into their country, but give them quarter and also bend to their will and demands. And as long as that continues to happen, these types of attacks will continue to happen in Paris, just like they've been happening over the last several years. From the same exact type of people doing the same exact type of things.
Mm-hmm.
So while my heart goes out to, you know, our French friends, and I wish that they didn't have to go through this. This is kind of France's fault. It's their fault. And as long as you continue to set your people up for this is going to continue to happen. That's why it happens in other places of the world. That's why, like, nobody cares about all the terrorism that happens in Libya or Syria or anything. Like, yeah, why? Because it's a daily freaking thing. Because their whole society is built on this kind of crap.
China.
Like. Yeah.
But the guys that, and it's the same people doing these things in China, but all of these knife attacks and, like, random street people getting run over and stuff, it's the same people doing the same crap. They're just using not the same tools. Yeah.
So we have a – before – normally we wait till we get through all of our stuff to talk to our guests. But I actually want to bring our guest on because his opinion and experiences matter. I'm actually pretty interested to hear about. So we have Rigo from TacFlow on our show today. How you doing, Rigo?
Good. How's my volume?
I don't know, Mason.
Sit closer.
Is it good? Is it working? Yeah. All right. So what do you think? What do you think, Rigo? What do you think about these Paris attacks?
I look at – the communities and civilization is either levels of domestication and violence. And so when you go to other parts of the world, it's just natural to see violence. It is part of culture. And the more we get away from that, we're almost shocked by it. And when you start having cultures with violence start coming to your world and they don't assimilate, you're going to get violence. It's just what it is. And it's not a surprise to me. It's more like... It's sad, but it's almost necessary for there to be an understanding why good men have to seek violence. It's not a moral thing. It's just necessary to be able to confront it. And that's how I feel about that. It's like, well, I train within violence to be able to confront it. There's no way around it.
Right.
So
nice
word.
Like it. So speaking of violence, actually, tonight, for any of you guys who are in the Phoenix area, I'm going to be doing a presentation tonight at ASU.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's a group there called Students for Self-Defense, and they've invited a ton of their fellow classmates and a whole bunch of the public as well to this event, from what I understand. It's tonight at 6:30 at the Schwada building. I'm probably butchering that name, but it's all kinds of crazy English, so I'm going to go with Schwada, building number 201 at ASU, 6:30 tonight. So if you want to, it's a free event. Come. I'll be there for about an hour talking about surviving violent encounters. which I think is pretty pertinent to this kind of discussion and what's going on.
Seems relevant.
So yeah, if you're in the Phoenix area and you got time tonight, make sure you swing by Schwada Building 201 at ASU. Starts at 6:30, runs about an hour. So that's that. Our new Nat Warfare video came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw that. It is getting pretty popular on the old social media. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of views on it. So if you have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, you should go check out the Independence Training. Yeah, if you're wrong. You should go check out the Independence Training YouTube channel, and it's posted there. And it's also on several different social media sites as well, Facebook and all that. All right. Veterans Action Shooting Matches.
Coming back up, right?
Five of them in a row.
Oh, Lord.
So we're going to be doing one in November, one December, January, February, and March. So our next one's going to be November the 28th.
Yep.
The weekend of Thanksgiving, but after Thanksgiving, obviously. It's going to be all day Saturday at Cowtown Range. If you came to the event before, you're welcome to come back. But just like everybody else, you've got to make sure that you pre-register because we only have a certain amount of slots. Now, the cool thing about the matches that we're doing now is we've got more sponsors than we had last time, so everyone's going to be shooting literally twice as much ammunition as before.
What?
Still bringing out the full auto, still bringing out our action matches, still bringing all that kind of stuff, but people are going to be shooting more. And, of course, it's the same as last time. If you're a veteran, it is totally free.
Word.
So ammunition, firearms, prizes, the
giveaways. Come shoot with us and stop shopping.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You can also join Independence Training on Black Friday for some good times.
Correct, yes. We've also got our Black Friday event, our annual Black Friday event that we always have. This year is going to be a little bit different. Normally what we do is we take one of our normal classes and we kind of spruce it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. This time we're actually going to just do a shooting skills class followed by a bunch of friendly competitions.
Pistol carbine or
it's gonna be pistol carbine.
Gotcha.
Yeah, pistol carbine. So yeah, normally in the past we've done something specific like a carbine class or a handgun class, and we just kind of spruce it up a little bit. We give away a bunch of prizes and stuff. But this time it's gonna be pistol and carbine. It's gonna be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Just shooting. We're not gonna be talking a lot about, you know, like we normally do with guns. We're talking about, you know, slaying bodies and all that kind of stuff. It's just gonna be shooting skills. It's just gonna be a good time. Just gonna be a good time. So make sure you check that out Black Friday. Pre-register through that or for that or for any of the Veterans Action Shooting Matches by emailing us info@trainingaz.com. And I also have to mention about the Training AZ thing that we get great emails from our Arms Room listeners.
Yeah?
Yeah. We get a lot of cool feedback and a lot of great stories, but we also get a lot of great show ideas. So like we mentioned on our last show, all of our show topics come from our listeners. So make sure that you email us and let us know if you've got a show idea. We're building our new calendar for December and January, and I've already got several topics on there from listeners who between last week and this week emailed us and said, hey, I'd like to hear about this. So,
sweet.
Yeah, even our show today, you know, that no one asked for Rigo specifically, though I'm sure there's people out there who want to hear from him. But they did ask about, like, let's hear about some off-square range training. And I'm like, boom, Rigo's the guy to talk to about
that. Bam. Got
it. You know, so if you have a topic that you want to talk about, please come out. Please email us, I mean. And please come out to the Veterans event. It's an awesome event. We always have a great time. So make sure you come out to it. Again, November 28th is the next one. And then we'll have some scattered throughout weeks and weekends from December all the way through March. So our last run was 6 months. This time we're going to be doing 5 months in a row. So it's going to be a good time. Anything else? Anything else I missed in the news?
No, I don't think so. I think Paris. Well, actually, Ronda Rousey got knocked out.
That was an awesome fight. I saw that.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, right in the mouth.
So, like, right in the jawbone.
Yeah, it was like right here, like in the throat, too. Yeah, that was awesome.
I think that and Paris were like the two big news stories from the weekend.
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of those fights because I don't have time to just sit around and watch the fight.
I wish I did because I used to follow it.
I watched that clip of her just getting kicked in the head. I had to watch it a dozen times. It was fantastic.
It'll be interesting to see how she recovers from that because one of two things is going to happen. She's going to go the route of Chuck Liddell, please don't show up and punch me in the head, Chuck, where you never really recover from that one massive defeat. Or it's going to go the way of George St. Pierre where you just come back and you're just like, meh, I'm basically just going to wreck all of you people now until the end of time.
She needs to improve her stand-up, like her hands. I mean, she's aggressive, and which is what you want in a fight, you know, not have to think about protecting yourself. But there has to be an intelligence in it. Mm-hmm. And her intelligence isn't grappling, which is great. But this Holly Holmes did.
She was trying to box her.
She absolutely wrecked her. So that was definitely interesting. One thing we did forget to mention about Cowtown Range, we had our open range days this last weekend.
Yeah.
Still slow, but more than last time. So we're going to be doing it again this weekend.
Word.
This Saturday and Sunday, Cowtown Range, same open range days, 8 a.m. until people stop showing up. We've got our normal open bay. We've got our action bay. We might have some full auto vendors out there. We rent out the 50 cal Barrett for people to shoot off our long range platforms, which are also open during open range. So there's all kinds of stuff going on at open range days. So make sure that you check them out this weekend coming up again.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's get on to the topic today.
All right. What are we talking about?
I don't even know.
Man.
Rego hit him. All right.
Don't hit me. I have a soft jaw.
All right. So we've got... it's because you work it out flexing it too much.
Yeah. Hey, whoa. Now I know.
All right. So, yeah. Hey, now you know. Yeah. That's where you go, Mason.
Let's go, Mason.
All right. So we've got Rego, as I mentioned before, from TacFlow. Rego, tell us a little bit about TacFlow. What is TacFlow?
TacFlow is a philosophy of... I looked at, you know, this community is indoctrinated to belief systems. There's a Marine way, Navy SEAL way, Army way. And I was like, wait, there's an intelligent way. Let's sit down and talk and find it. I wasn't trying to tell people, hey, you got to do it my way. Let's just search for intelligence. When I met, I basically met Chris Kyle. And Chris Kyle and I became friends in 2009. And he looked at what I was doing. And my philosophy of TacFlow is tactically flowing amongst technologies. Whatever those technologies were, they should fit together seamlessly. Okay. If they have principles of combat principles, they should work together. If they're not working together, there's something disconnected from A or B, and we got to find out what's wrong. Or they both don't belong there, and we got to do something else. So he liked what I did, and he told me when he got out of the SEAL teams, he would come and look me up. And I honestly wasn't really sure if that was true. You know, a lot of people say they're going to start a training company, and a lot of people have a lot of aspirations to get out of the military that they want to do something. And sure enough, he was getting out. He was going to Texas. He was getting a company started. He wanted to be on it. So I felt kind of honored. I hadn't served in the military, in the law enforcement community. I had helped for years because I had my own background in executive protection. And I was a resource for them, but I had never really kind of served this community. And he kind of told me, you're doing your country a disservice by not sharing your stuff. So I decided to look at what I can do to help. I didn't want to be a salesman. I didn't want to sit there and try to say, hey, this is the next big thing. Mm-hmm. No, my search was to try to elevate the level of standards of training and look at intelligence. So when I did that, it kind of helped push craft out there in the community, because most people don't remember back then, Chris Kyle was nobody. And what I mean by that is nobody cared. He was another mm-hmm. SEAL. Mm-hmm. You know, he was my friend, but you know, when in the community, it's very competitive, and somebody goes, okay, we got another long range guy. Who cares? And, when I went with Chris, he would sit back and watch me, cause it would take probably an hour for me to explain the philosophies of motion. And, I would work with shooters, and, you know, I'm not known to be a shooter cause I'm a hands-on guy, but I was teaching shooting and I wasn't supposed to. What I was finding is the training scars that were occurring on the range were changing the way people were doing things in dynamic entry, close quarter, anything that was like that. And I kept watching why it wasn't working, and I was watching training scars that were developed at the range. So I started talking about behavioral elements of how the body has to learn what we're doing with the gun as it enters our body and at a behavioral level for fighting. And this was something that interests Chris. So I helped Chris, basically by being on the menu for craft, give a level of standard and intelligence that people go, okay, what else is on the menu? Chris Kyle's on the menu. There's all these guys on the menu. And it was funny because, like I said, Chris is, you know, a hero. There was guys on our team that are a hero. But when you're around so many guys in the community who have experiences and all of them have done more things, it was somebody outside the box who honestly opened the door in a sense of, hey, listen, we're looking for something more. Even when I talked to Chris, I said, Chris, don't teach a regular precision rifle class. There's so many people who do that. Mm-hmm. Do what you do best and give your experiences behind it, because that will save another life. Mm-hmm. Give of yourself. So that's how I was a part of craft. And when Chris passed, the guys mm-hmm. were at a loss. We weren't sure which way we were going to go. When we looked at the history of craft and all the places I had been representing craft nationally and at a global level, I said Tactflow had been there since day one. Let me bring all you guys to where we go because we can control it as instructors. You know how it is when you're a teacher, an instructor, your philosophies are different than business. Mm-hmm. I'm not really interested in making money, which sucks because you have to make a living. We had a philosophy and passion of sharing. So I honestly would talk to guys on our team and I would look through their resumes. I didn't care if they were Navy SEALs, Delta, a CAG, you know, guys from the SF community. And I would just sit them down. I go, why do you want to do this? Mm. Is it to make money? Then I don't want you on my team. I want guys who had some desire to elevate, give passion. And I can talk to them that way, even though I had never done their job because I had a certain standard of myself. Mm. And so that's where we started with the inspiration of Chris. And then we came back to Arizona because, you know, I'm from Arizona, so I didn't want to stay in Texas. Mm-hmm. And so Tactflow is the blood of the inspiration from when we sat down and started deciding why do we want to do this. So now we control it ourselves instead of having to, you know, deal with investors and all that. It's owned by us. So.
Well, I love the philosophy, man, because, like, you know, as instructors ourselves and, you know, we run our own training business as well. And that was it's almost exactly how we feel about things. When I first got it started instructing, I did not start it as a business. I got started instructing because I enjoyed instructing. And then it just kind of turned into something that was generating a little bit of income and then a little bit more. And now it's all I do.
Yeah, you got to make that leap and decide, okay, how do I do this to support my family? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to be that guy in the middle?
Right.
I was that guy in the middle since 2000. Mm-hmm. You know, I would do it. Guys would come and live in my house, mm-hmm. Immersion classes all the time. And I never really did it for money. I would just make my money off security, go do my thing, and then come back and teach. But once Chris says you're kind of teaching only ones and twosies, mm-hmm. you're not helping the community that way. And I'm like, yeah, I never thought about it that way. So I decided if I was going to do that, you know, if there was in this community, I'm not trying to be the next thing. Like, hey, we need another way of looking at this. Mm-hmm. I just saw there was a lot of holes. And to start, frankly, when I looked at law enforcement came to me first and asked me, hey, how do we protect ourselves? How do we solve this problem? And I said, well, the problem isn't the guy that is attacking you. It starts before that. And they go, what do you mean? I go, the behavior of the officers was broken. Mm-hmm. And they didn't understand. I was like, there is a culture that is broken. Mm-hmm. And when I teach law enforcement, the first thing I start off with is walking. And everybody's like, what? I go, yeah, I actually get people walking to understand mechanics of dynamics of motion. Because most people don't even walk with comfort. They don't understand what information they're giving. And I said, now we're going to stop. You're going to have to confront somebody. It's not necessarily a fight yet, but it started a long time ago. And everything he's doing, he's understanding your will for violence. Okay? The gun is the means for violence, but the will for violence is in you. Mm-hmm. And he can tell you're disconnected. He can tell in every porous thing you do that it's broken. And I can tell. So how do we relink that? And it's the first hour of my class, and you see people's eyes start to change. I'm like, here, before I get you back to your gun, we're going to get that gun through, not through survivability, not through self-preservation. It's going to be an extension of your will. What is your will? You know, and that's how I teach. So it became a philosophical change. Mm-hmm. And so when I see all these other, you know, self-defense and, you know, this is the way we teach, I go, the worst case scenario possibilities always hit me, and I go, there's no such thing for Matt. When you're in touch with violence, there's no such thing as a worst case scenario. It's a liberation. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't understand that. So when I try to reorganize people to their understanding of what it is to do this job or what you're going to do, you have to have a true belief centered around it's not about you. It's never about you. It can't be because it's you know, self-preservation takes over. And the intelligence goes, you know what? I shouldn't be here. This is dangerous. So you have to wash that away. To do that, you have to create culture, a warrior culture. It can't be a bumper sticker. It can't be a tattoo. It can't be a shirt you bought. It has to be because it's easy. I've seen it. I've seen guys who have all that. And you know what I'm saying? But it has to be something where you're willing to, you know, go through something and it's no longer about you. It has to be something bigger. So I didn't come from the community, but I was brought through the community. My grandmasters were all soldiers, and they trained me. I used it in my work, my ability. And so when I was in the community, it was natural for me. So when I shared with them, they were like, I became a guide. And it was different than being a player. You know, it was an evolution for myself. You know, I'm 44 now. But in my 30s, I couldn't teach because I'm going to kick doors harder. Whatever it is, I'm going to outdo you, you know, because you're a player. You can't have Michael Jordan trying to coach, you know. So, you know, now in the last 6 years, I think my evolution to being a great teacher, and that's what I try to get other people to learn how to be a Phil Jackson, basically how I'm going to unlock you, and I'll be a cheerleader on the side and going, wow. And people who look at you go, why'd you do that? How did that guy do that? That's my job. My job is to make people into complete weapon systems. Not a great shooter, not a great, but a weapon system itself. And I heard that before. I heard it from people, you know, one mind, any weapon. But I didn't see it. There was a disconnect on how the concepts and the body actually work together. And so that's what I'm really kind of trying to introduce. So when people go, what system's better than the other? I go, honestly, if you take an animal and teach them anything, the animal is going to use the little bit of intelligence to become violent, okay? But too often, we try to work with, I call it the rabbits out there, and try to teach the rabbit tricks to survive. And I go, why don't you just awaken them to be the wolf? The wolf is natural. It can find it. The hard part is the morality. You got to find the morality within that to make sure you're understanding your violence. What is the purpose of your violence? And so that's how I work. I've bring that philosophy, and when I work with other guys, they fall in line with it. I don't try to rewrite. I stay in my lane. I don't try to pretend I know other things that I don't. But the nature of human behavior, I do understand, because I've had to work my whole around the globe understanding his intent. My job is to erase intent. That's it. Not erase the technique. Not to erase the threat. Is erase his intent to even think about doing something. That's how I've always done everything. So it's a little different.
That's cool, man.
There were minds melting all over the world.
That's awesome philosophy, man. So.
Wow.
So let me ask you this then. We're going to kind of talk about something we were talking about before the show. You know, we were talking about the different type of training that you do and how it's very, you know, non-square range kind of stuff. And one of the stories you told us was at your new facility, which is, you know, pretty incredible facility. I know I still need to get over there and actually physically see it because it's literally 2 miles down the road or something. Yeah. But you guys just opened it beginning of October, right?
We're in the process of finishing. We finished the construction. We got into it in October. Okay. So we've been in there a month and a half, and people come in and are saying, wow, you've done this in a month and a half. I'm like, yeah, the structures are done. We're just going through final process with fire to make sure we're in compliance with everything. The structures actually went through building permits because they are two-story. One of the things that I've done when traveling is, we are a mobile training company, so we travel and we go bring in different instructors, and we'll go teach a class. We'll do a SWAT school or something else. And the hardest thing is logistically trying to find a location to do it. Mm-hmm. So I'll be talking with their command staff. Okay, you guys got a building for us. We're going to do Sims. Yeah. Like 2 days before we get there, they lost the building. We're scrambling around, and you know, there's a diminishing moment where all the training starts to becoming, okay, what can we do? Mm-hmm. So I decided about a year and a half ago that I was going to build something that I can control. And it started with the vision. I was in England. I went there on behalf of Kraft. I was working with the guys of the Met Police, the counter, the guys at CR-19, is their version of counterterrorism. And they took me to this facility that was kind of like what we built, but it was about half the size. It was a little village, and I was just, oh, man, one day I would love to have that. So it started from there. That was about 5 years ago, and I was inspired by it, and I started, how can I do something like that? Fiscally, the way I run tax flow, I'm not trying to make money off my trainers. I am an agent where I've paved ways to get those guys out. I still am a teacher, and the last thing I want to do is take away your money if you work for me. And I know that sounds crazy, but the reality is that's your sweat equity, that's your intelligence, you own it. My job is to help you get there, do the logistics, accounts receivable, and help you. And so the guys who work for me is a great team. So I didn't want TaxFlow to be about me by any means. I didn't want it to be about one guy. I wanted it to be about the group and the intelligence we're sharing. I don't even like putting my name on that thing. You know, it's other people who really want me to have my bio, and I'm like, I don't really want that. You know, I don't post stuff on YouTube about me. I'm not trying to sell the next cool gun draw that I'm doing, and I'm national. Why is that? It's because of, you know, word of mouth. Mm. In this community, I really want word of mouth. And I worked with one of my guys on the team. He's from 7th Group. He thought it was extremely strange that 95% of all my business is LE and mill. And he goes, you know how rare that is? You know, because we who work are you know, about 80% or 90% of our business is civilians, and then we get some civil LE training and stuff. Mm-hmm. He goes, but you've done it the other way around. So in the last year and a half, 2 years, we started teaching civilian stuff. That's been new to me. And I actually had to change my vocabulary because I had no idea how to even work with civilians. But it's been important, and it actually helps us because it does create a cash flow where we can go back and give to the first responders and say, you know what? I've had this from day one, even when I met Chris. my passion of giving to these communities of guys who bleed for me, I didn't want to sit there and go, hey, you're a dollar sign for me. So if you come into the room, you're equal to $600, you know, officers can't get money, funding, family issues, whatever it is, they can't do it. And if an officer wrote me a letter, I've never turned anybody down. I've always given scholarships from day one. And so when I have civilians now who are helping in the economics, that's what helps me because now I give more. You know, it's not like I make more, I actually give more. So that's been a philosophy from day one. So when I got Kraft and I was going to bring TACFLO to back to Arizona, I did speak to Chris Kyle's parents, his dad and his brother, and I asked them for permission. And he said, you're a grown man, you don't need my permission. And, well, he's right and he's wrong. The reality is, I come from a very old, you know, time, I guess, where we honor everybody, their family, their brethren, whatever it is, and we make sure they're okay with it. Even when I created my logo for TACFLO, it was an honor to Kraft and Chris. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure his dad was good with it because he's the head of the family, okay? At that point, that's who I'm good with. And so I asked Wayne Kyle, and he was very cool with me. We still talk, and we're friendly, and he believes in our mission. And so that's what matters to me is that I definitely don't want to embarrass Chris's name ever, you know, for picking out a guy who's an unknown, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So
you should be like a preacher and make your own religion. I'm in.
I'm in, Rigo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that I was trained into training a man mm-hmm. is very different because, you know, there's guys in the room here and each one of you has a different way to train. In the military, we train you the same and you got to fit a square bot, you know, a square peg in a round circle. But when you get cultivated into mm-hmm. another thing, we go through process. There's different ways to cultivate different people. And it's taken me a long time to understand the way I train isn't the way somebody else is going to train. But that doesn't mean he's not a warrior. Doesn't mean he's not capable. I mean, I have to build and have that. So there is philosophy. There's, you know, as well as the technical. The technical is only a part of it, you know, because it can be broken. I can show you it. And I wanted the will to not be broken. How does the will get cultivated? You know, how do we take you that? How do we get young men now who are entering the military and law enforcement who've never been in a fight before other than, you know, on their Facebook page or something, you know? So how do they understand that? And the thing is, they're going to go out and meet people out there in the community, and they're going to go to fight for us against people who are, from day one, brought up in violence. Mm-hmm. They're stronger than you. Mm-hmm. They're no longer – they're a wolf. I mean, they know how to take you apart. It's instinctual. For beheadings for us, it's strange to watch, but over there it's normal. You know, it's not something uncommon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have just domesticated ourselves – over time to not understand that, you know. I mean, before 9/11, look at the long span we had where we really didn't have conflict, you know. So I was working out in Latin America, and I was dealing with conflict. So I'd come back and talk to my buddies in the military, and they thought I was kind of crazy. Like, wow, you're kind of wound up. And I'm like, no, they hate us. the world doesn't like us right now. They're mm-hmm. like, where you been? And I'm like, I would tell them, you know. And so when 9/11 kicked in, it was like Rigo, hey, where you been? Because we need your help. We need you to help teach us some stuff. I said, yeah, they don't like us, man. I'm telling you, we've kind of put ourselves in a bubble. So, but
now on that note, that was like the biggest reason I wanted you to come on the show was to talk about the training scars that so many people have. And I believe that way too many people put too much focus on the physical skills of shooting. Like, we've had people come through our shooting classes before and they're like, well, you don't shoot a lot in your shooting classes. And we're like, no, not really. Because, you know, similar to your kind of passion, we kind of have the same thing where it's like, we want to make you more of someone who's capable of thinking and fighting with or without a gun.
Yep.
You know, and programming
someone to fight with a gun or any weapon is it's relatively simple.
Yeah.
You know, I show you, you demonstrate, I demonstrate, I correct you, boom, we do it repetitively. Yeah. You now know how to use that weapon. Like, you know how to use that tool.
But it doesn't mean you can use that tool.
It doesn't mean you can use it effectively in a bad situation.
Yeah, I mean, when we look at the numbers out there and we say, okay, I do this a law enforcement all the time. Okay, what weapon kills more people? You know, when you start going down the line, you got hammers above guns.
Right.
You got knives above guns. You got all these things. I go, bats above guns. Mm-hmm. You know, got all these blunt objects. Do you think people went to a specific course
to learn how to hit someone with a baseball
with
bat?
A pair of scissors? You know, no. It's I have an equation that I wrote, and this is for the LE community, and I always write it. It's F equals M plus W. F is fear. That is the equation. M is the means to commit violence, and W is the will to do so. If they're not connected, there's no fear. With fear, there's no compliance. Okay? There's punishment. People try to get compliance through punishment and attrition. That takes for a long time. But everything I do from motion to movement brings fear, the will to destroy. And it can change the volume control where now I'm watching. This is where my training has been there for years. I'm watching at subtle increments of the body telling me that this person is succumbing through fear.
Mm.
And I go and say, turn around, and they will turn around. And the police officers will ask me, how'd you get him to comply? I go, you're not understanding. There's these cues that he understands as an animal that he can read that I'm going to kill him. And I know, I don't know if you say stuff like this, but I talked to them that way. I said, but with you, even though you're wearing the costume, you got the badge on, you got the gun, there's a disconnect to your violence. Mm-hmm. And he knows it because he comes from a place where he works around violence.
Mm-hmm.
He knows it better than you. And so he knows you're disconnected. He won't comply to you. He will never listen to you. And therefore, now he'll attack you, you'll fight, and now you're going to have to shoot somebody because it's disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
So on the range, I start off people, because I have guys out there who are phenomenal shooters. I'm not going to tell people, hey, come to my shooting class, it's better than that guy's shooting class. It's the way it started for me for shooting. I have great friends who are great instructors. They help me out, you know, because like I said, I'm just like everybody else. I had to learn. But because of my ingraining of these increments of behavior and violence, the gun with me became a little different. And then my same friends who showed me how to shoot would come see me a few years later and go, wow, what are you doing? And then I'd go, oh, this is what I do. And I didn't understand why they didn't get it. It's because they were thinking of the gun instead of the dynamics of gunfighting.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things we were doing, we were working with a team, and we had a contract with them through Kraft, and it was for our Tier 1 team group. I was not on it because I don't have the pedigree. I don't have the lineage, so I'm basically an observer. I had to go teach another class during that, and I flew over. I actually got back, and then I went over to go observe these two instructors who on their resume were phenomenal. They had the years behind them, and I went to see them, and I was just scratching my head like, wow, I can read in the class, and we're talking with a large group. This is a military course. They were struggling with their students, and this is day 4 out of a 5-day carbine school, and I'm like, And I'm watching this, and in my head I go, maybe I'm just too critical because I have a high standard for my own training. Maybe I'm just too critical. Maybe this is the way it is. We got the after-action reports back, and they were bad. They were horrific. And I felt bad because Chris had passed. This was a representation of Chris's name. And I actually contacted the group myself, and I said, I know you guys don't know who I am. I'm really not anybody, but I have a course I'm doing for LE. I would love to invite two of your guys on me to come and watch me teach. It's called Combative Transition to Firearms. And the philosophy is behind it. It's not through survival. It's through motion. I'm going to show how it works. So they did. They actually sent me a guy, and he wrote back through his after-action report. It was phenomenal. And I got in the door that way, and I said, okay, now can you do me a favor? Can you ask your command staff if I can come bring a couple of my guys? We're not going to go to the range. We're not going to use anything. I'm going to just bring some rubber ducky rifles, and I'm going to teach your guys how to walk. And they're like, what? I said, I'm going to teach you guys how to walk for 3 hours. So they gave me an opportunity. I went in there, and they were impressed just in walking. The philosophies of how we learned, and I got a two-week contract for us. I actually organized it. I helped teaching it. I brought other guys around me who were phenomenal instructors, and I organized a pattern of learning that I found that we can take our students in a different place because we can teach them behavior. So every morning before we'd actually hit the range, we would walk together in motion to develop the angles. And so this was new. And the after action report we got back was the best course they'd ever taken. And I looked at all the guys who were with me, and I looked at them, and they're like, okay, Rigo, we get it. Because, you know, I'm coming from outside the community. I'm coming in from a different angle. And I said, hey, what you guys are doing is incredible. You need trigger press, front sight, grip, all of that. I'm teaching behavior. The behavior is broken. And with everything he does, the gun changes. So now you have to be stronger in your front sights. You have to do all this. They're so disaligned in their will to want to create violence that they don't know it. So right now, you know, we'll get a guy to do a simple drill when he has to walk left or right. But to put a gun in his hand, he can't walk and chew gum. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the moment he touches something technical, it breaks down his natural ability. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it deals with range, because when they have gun, they want to square up to the target. I go, sometimes you just can't. Mm-hmm. The body doesn't work that way. It's not efficient. So I started looking at why they were failing. And like I said, there's other guys out there who are phenomenal teachers. I will tell you, go to them. People who come to me, they don't come here because I'm going to teach them how to be a better empty mag reloader. I'm not going to tell them how to do this or clean up this. I'm going to help them get behind their gun in a way. And it does increase their shooting capabilities immediately. And that's kind of what I brought to the shooting community. It wasn't more like, hey, let me give you the next cool thing. I just saw there was a problem, and I saw it a lot.
So what do you think is happening on the square range? Because so many people train on a square range, and for a lot of people it's because they just don't have anything else.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of people who they would love a 360 range, they would love a multi-story building, they would love the ability to, you know, be able to move and shoot throughout, but they just don't have that capability. And especially when you're dealing with agencies and some organizations who just don't have the funding for it, and then you've got civilians who just may not have it in their area, or maybe it's not within their budget or whatever. So people get kind of forced. I think the majority of training classes that happen on a square range. What do you think, just kind of based on your experience and your observations on students and the mistakes that they make? You've talked a lot about the will of violence and how the will is more important than the gun, which is awesome. You know, and again, it's something that we kind of tell our students as well, that, you know, the ability to fight is nothing without the will to fight. So what kind of mistakes are people making, and how can people avoid making those mistakes? How can people, when they're training on their own or even training in a class with someone, how can they start to avoid or correct behavioral mistakes that are screwing up their will to fight?
One of the things I look at is, obviously, I work a lot with law enforcement, and law enforcement is different than military. Military, the direct to threat mentality is prevalent. Okay, so they're, you know, they have what I'm trying to teach others. LE, because they're our first responders here, are they've been taught distance is your friend philosophies, and to me, not always. You can't just use a blanket statement for everything. You know, there's times where distance is your friend. But when you're within certain pressures of violence, you have to bring it. And how do you do that in a gunfight without being an idiot and getting into a 50-50 gunfight? When we do our solutions and we talk amongst, you know, our peers, and we say, is this a 50-50 gunfight? And they're like, what does that mean? It's like you're standing with your equal or somebody better than you.
You're just having a slugfest.
And you're just having a slugfest. Mm-hmm. You're both going down. That is not optimal. You know, that doesn't solve the problem. Hey, you are solving his problem, but you're not doing anything. So we want angles. We want to make sure that you're moving in this, and you start building the visualization of how that gunfight's going to look. What are you doing? What increment of time are you in the fight? So we look at, for me, when I start teaching, the moment you break out a holster, it doesn't matter what clock. It's eyes, gun, body. A lot of times when I watch officers, it's eyes, body, then gun. And by that time, their flee response kicks in because their gun's not in the fight as quick. We're talking increments of time. Their natural response is to flee, and they start running backwards. And I said it's because of the range of always having to square up to the target. The target, you can't always do that. Yes, your body armor's in front, but I was taught not be in the line. Get off the line. Mm. And so what's the quickest way to get off the line? You will see it, you know. And so I started watching this. So when we started doing, you know, guys fighting, and we'll do a lot of Sims work, you know, force on force too. We're actually not just say, hey, this is what I believe. Let's do it. Let's take it to the test. And we'll watch officers, and you'll see the deep ingraining of their training scars kick in. So they'll win a fight, push, and they'll run backwards. And I go, why are you running back? Why don't you change the angle? Why don't you do this? They're like, they want to do it, but their programming is so deep into just running backwards. I go, now what you're going to do is he's not going to be erasing his intent because you're not bringing pressure. You'll reactivate him again. Now you're going to have to kill him. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to do things. You're not shutting down the mind. By leaving pressure, you can allow somebody back in the fight. And so it is a more military philosophy, not LE. And, you know, this is that conflict of, you know, being a public servant where you can't be overly aggressive. You can't do this. But once you're there, if you're not hitting the switch, you shouldn't be there. You shouldn't be a cop, unfortunately. And so one of the things I do when I step in front of the classrooms, I go, hey, you know, I've done SWAT schools and all this. I go, hey, I'm not an officer. I've never been a cop. I've never been a soldier. So why am I here? And then they'll shake their heads because their chain of command asked me to come in. I go, I'm going to share with you something that we're going to do and realign you. And usually it takes about 3 hours, 4 hours for them to understand why I'm there. So I'm not here to reinvent the wheel. I'm here to redirect you to drive the vehicle you have in the right direction. It's been going in the wrong direction. So, I have a lot of philosophy behind it because that's the only way to get in somebody. If I, you know, I have friends in all branches. You know, we are, you know, TACFLO is incorporates, you know, Marines, Army, you know, you name it. We have all the guys here. And so I don't want somebody to just go, if it's not working, go harder, faster, you know, because it does work sometimes, but you can't learn that can become a training scar as Ronda Rousey, you know, it can work until it doesn't. And so you go harder, faster until you get somebody who's got talent. Right. And guess what? It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So we want to have the mentality going, you know, have the aggression, but having intelligence. The logo that we put together is called the Precision of Violence. And what that meant was, you know, there's random acts of violence out there anybody can do because they're not connected to it. There's other people who can create violence. But having the precision of violence and chaos, that's training. Because you're doing something that is just not, you're purposely going after that. And so that's what we work on.
So what do you think people are doing that's creating the kinds of bad habits, so to speak? You know, like we try to overcome a lot of different, you know, square range training mentalities in our own training. There's certain things we don't do. There's certain ways we don't tell our students to do things. We don't, you know, we don't problem solve for them. We make them problem solve, you know, a lot of things like that. And I think that there's a lot of square range habits that are being formed that sometimes people just don't even recognize because it's a lot of like, well, we've always done this. So why don't we continue to do it? And one of the things I'm talking about is the story we were talking about before the show where, you know, you had a group of guys at TACVille, your new training facility, and you were trying to get them to basically scan and assess, right? Look for threats.
Yep.
And so many people are used to what we refer to as the tactical head whip, where you look around, but you don't actually see anything, yep. Right? And so they looked around, as you were saying, all the guys were looking, but they weren't seeing.
They were missing.
Yes. Yeah, they were missing things. And so consequently, if that were a armed, you know, combatant or whatever, they probably would have got dumped, right?
Yep.
So how do people avoid doing that kind of stuff? Like what are the biggest problems you see having run a lot of people through and work with a lot of, you know, special operations guys, law enforcement guys, now civilians? What do you see are some of the top issues that people are having, some of the top bad problems or mistakes or whatever that people are making on square range?
The problem is because we work within a ATI personality community, mm-hmm. where everybody's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really talk about philosophies. You have to show them. Mm-hmm. So I call it inoculation. And until they go through and get a taste, and you know, like when people go through my class and then they go back and get an after action report to their group, they go, so what did you learn? They're like, I can't even explain it because it's a personal thing. It's like I gave you new color in the rainbow that changes the hues for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't ever describe it to anybody because that color does not exist. So sometimes they have to go through a laboratory to understand what failures are doing on the range. And some of them are the way they're manipulating their handgun, the way they're not communicating, because obviously shoot, move, and communicate are principles as well. They get so focused and assed up basically because of the adrenaline, you know, is kicking them. And that's just more time needed. And the range is me to work on my fundamentals, my front side, my grip to get in there. And then I got to start changing it. Okay, what do I do for angles? Start visualization. One of the things I do in my class, and this is embarrassing for all the A-type personalities out there, by day two, I stand them in the middle of our room and everybody sits down like a big rectangle, and he has to close his eyes and go through a confrontation in his mind and act it out and go through draw and get out and get, find his front sights. And when he opens his eyes, he should be right on sight, should have his grip, everything. And it's embarrassing to these guys because they're like, they're not used to, they don't want to be judged. They don't want to do it wrong. And I go, no, this is just liberation in your mind. Because if you can't start visualizing your fight here, how are you going to do it out there? And so after even that, you know, we still haven't even gone to the range yet. We spent 2 days doing combatives inside with the you know, how we're going to get our gun. We do visualization drills. We do it with our eyes closed. They're confronting all these different small increments of fear within their own A-type personality learning. And then we go to the range, and then they're able to liberate themselves to how they can shoot. And so it's a process. If I did it, if you say, hey, can you break this down into a two-hour class? I'm like, no. I mean, it does take time. So the training scars I do see is the body posture. People always say, hey, get behind your gun, or what does that mean? And I work on the science of how to drive the gun. And everybody's like, you know, everybody has their own words. You know, and then people will argue like, what, you know, you shouldn't call it this, you shouldn't do that. I go, listen, the human body, the human mind has to learn using visual cues. Like I said, hey, I want your hand to look like a snake, you'll make it look like this.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean it's a snake. So when I say drive behind the gun, I'm using words from other instructors, and other people will argue. So I understand that, but these are things, whatever you can do to relate to your student, get them to go. And you'll get a student who doesn't relate to that word, you have to come up with something else.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing for me I see is body behavior and posturing. And so when they're at a 50-50 stance and hear any pressure that comes to them will make them go backwards. And so unless they're willing to break the angles and go forward, everything I know in a 50-50 gunfight will make them go back. So we just have to move and you'll see it pull, and it actually starts pulling the gun up. It's very hard to push that gun down when you start going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are one of the biggest scars I see is basically behavior, the body alignment, how they get behind the gun, when they're pressing out, you know, learning to break the angles. That's my thing. And most people's solution when there's pressure is to run backwards. And they run back like this. And I'm like, that's not the most efficient way to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But because of them trying to stay their chest in front of the target, you're making yourself a target. You know, you can move. You can shoot on in different angles. And I think all training is good. There is a point where you can overtrain in something and create a scar.
Mm-hmm.
And so I make sure that there's plenty of training on front sight, grip, accountability, you know, backstop. All these things are crucial, but there's a part of gunfighting that you have to learn, is which is motion and movement. So
now let's talk about your training facility, because that is a place where you can facilitate all this.
Yes.
Like you can facilitate all the philosophies that you have, all the training modalities that you have. You can facilitate all that. And that's why you built this whole place to begin with.
Yeah, I got tired of people saying, well, how do you know your shit works? I'm like, okay. Well, you know, when I first started working with Ali, I was brought in as a, you know, I'll make fun of myself, as a little ninja.
Mm-hmm.
I was that one percenter that people couldn't figure out. And so my buddies from the SWAT teams would ask me to come in because, you know, the A-type personalities think they can solve every equation. Mm-hmm. And they would bring me in, the sergeants and the lieutenants, so I can basically take apart their teams.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, they would go from different evolutions. They would go to start using flashbangs. They would do everything knowing that I'm even there and I'm going to give them resistance. They still had a hard time. And they would lose several officers every time. And me without a gun. Okay. And that was the beginning. And I started like trying to understand, why are you guys doing it this way? Because I didn't understand the way, you know, doing entry, because I've never been taught entry. But I can see as a bad guy, they were doing things wrong. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, they were using aggression, or they were taking me in the hallway and they hadn't checked me or secured me yet. They were allowing me to do things. And so I started helping that early on. This is years ago. And they would ask me questions. I said, I would never let a guy like me in that place because it can go bad. They never thought about it that way. So that's how I started getting into the community to helping, is because I was looking at it from my possibilities. And if I can do it, I'm nobody special. That means there's guys out there, that's all they train, that's, they're going to do that. And so when I looked at Tacville, I wanted a place where we can bring vehicles in, we can make it dark, we can go NVG, we can go low light for LE who are not really into MVG yet, but we can use the power of light. We can sit there and slow things down enough where they're learning, because sometimes I always use this analogy as like a race car. If you go too fast and you put a guy in the, he's going to crash, and he doesn't learn anything. He just learns that, hey, there's a point where he's going to crash. Okay. Well, we have to teach you how to drive. We have to teach you how to feel and understand, you know, the tire pressure. These guys are moving at such speeds, but they're in tune with every part of the car. And as a team, the dynamics of a team has to start being able to do that. Like you should know how to move and break two weapons into a room at the same time. You should feel it. You should know it. And it takes time. And too often, because of the A-type personality, when it's too difficult, they just go harder, faster. They just want to get to the outcome. Whatever the outcome is, even if it's disastrous, they're just going to get there quicker until there's force on force. And then everybody goes, okay, there is consequences. So we needed to create a force-on-force laboratory to allow them to go, okay, let's get some realistic training, because you guys are running through this house so quick. It's great because there's nobody shooting at you now. Now we're going to have some actors in here. And then they go, okay, things change. I go, well, then why are you changing your training? Because it's now more realistic. I go, you should continue training the way you're going to fight. And so this kind of helps, you know, all types of training. And like I said, it's there for all these different teachers and instructors. It's not about me. It's not about my curriculums being on top of the thing. Like I said, people won't want to eat my shit. I always tell them, don't drink the Kool-Aid. You know, I want you to in this class, I want you to tell me it's wrong. I want you to tell me I'm full of shit. But at the end of it, they're like, okay, my job was not to tell you to try to be a convert. I'm not trying to convert anybody. I'm just trying to get you to seek, if not my intelligence, find some intelligence, you know. But what I'm seeing in that, we're recognizing there is a breakdown in certain, a lot of training. So
now you've got the opportunity to run law enforcement, military, and everything through your place. And as you mentioned before, that's the bulk of what you've taught in the past. Yes. You're going to have some civilian courses over there as well.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to start for the, you know, in the last year and a half, I actually teach with a guy named Randy DeHay, who's a former 7th group, who's a phenomenal teacher. He took the time, a necessary time, out of the community to learn to teach. Because there is a small adjustment to be made when you get out of the military. We have guys who come from downrange who are phenomenal at what they do, but there's a disconnect in how to translate, and it takes time. So Randy had enough time where he became a great teacher, and he and I put together some course curriculum, because he teaches some things very, very well, and I'm teaching. He basically, the way he summed it up is like, Rigo, I'm teaching from belt buckle up, you're teaching from belt buckle down. And so we work on the complete human, the body, as it relates to shooting. And we do pistol carbine. And but we have other instructors as well, you know, and we do have different curriculums out there. And we are, you know, like I said, this facility, it is a big facility. It's 20,000 square feet. To maintain something like that, we are going to bring some civilian. We are going to allow civilian training. We are going to create an atmosphere where the civilians can learn, because, honestly, you're helping us. You're not a customer. You're a participant, because with your dollars spent there, we actually help more officers, more soldiers, because when they can't get the budgeting because of the administration, I don't tell them, hey, sorry, wait until next year, wait until the next president. We say, okay, send us what you can. We work on it anyways. It's just the way we've been doing it. So
now how about the other aspect of the civilian stuff where you guys are going to be doing some paintball in there and some airsoft and stuff like that?
Yeah. You know, like I said, I had to look at the relationship of ratios of money. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not paintball. It's a thing called reball. I didn't want paint indoor because of the mess.
Yeah.
It would destroy everything. And now the training value, when people really want to come use it, it's all messed up.
Right.
So they're using paintball markers, but they're rubber rounds. They do hurt. There is a pain threshold, but they're not moving like Sims. So it's enough for civilians to go in there, go, ow, and not go, oh, I'm out of here. You know,
sure.
If they hit with
paintball hurts enough. I mean, if it's about that same pain. Then
but if it's a Sim round, I mean, you get hit and
most Sim rounds suck.
Yeah, Sim, we know how those feel.
Yeah, yeah. When you get hit with those, it's not like you want to play all day. So no. We had to come up with the right format where we can run. I looked around. I had never played paintball before. So I hired a manager who, you know, they're into gaming and the community of gaming and online play and all this stuff. So I hired a manager who will handle that for me. And I talked to him a lot and say, hey, by you being successful allows me to continue with my passion and helping. So this is what we looked at. We're going to be running 64 players per session, a 4-hour session. And in those, you're doing 8-versus-8 team objective sessions, where it's everything from disarming bombs to high value targets to you name it. And so it'll be fun. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to the guys to go in there. And, you know, like I said, it's a place for the community to help create our revenue stream for us, where we don't have to sit there and lose our integrity in teaching, you know, to make the next dollar. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to ever do that. I didn't want to ever put, you know, and try to sell, you know, pictures of Chris Kyle down the road. You know, this would be horrific. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to monopolize or make money off somebody else. I wanted to have a revenue stream so we can just continue.
Now, I know, Rigo, I could sit here and talk to you all day, but unfortunately we can't.
Yeah, I got you. No worries.
But I wish we could. but I'm looking forward to coming out to the facility and taking a look at it. Where can people get more information about TacFlow and TacVille and the civilian side, which is going to be called Splat Town?
Splat Tactics.
Splat Tactics, that's
AZ,
it.
Easy, yeah.
So where can they go? Where can they go on social media? Where can they go on the website? How can they get more information about
TacFlow.com, you can get onto it. If you actually go to Craft, there's a page there that tells the history. You can go to TacFlow from there.
Okay.
If you're still
part of it. And what's TacFlow's website?
TacFlow.com.
TacFlow, so that's easy. And then
TACFLOW.
TacVille has its own website too now?
Yeah, TacVille is just like Countdown. It was basically, it supports TacFlow and the Splat Tactics. Tactics is basically the civilian side for gaming. Mm-hmm. But TacFlow is going to give civilian courses there as well during the week. And home invasion, and then we'll go out to Cowtown and do classes out there with, you know, basically this is a way to, you know, Cowtown is 20 minutes from us from now, so we're able to start here and go there, get away a lot of the inoculation and fear of holding a gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can go out and vice versa. We can go out from live fire and come back inside, actually putting to a practical exercise.
And how about any social media stuff you guys have going on?
We have Facebook for TacFlow and for Splat Tactics AZ.
Okay.
TacFlow is also on Instagram. I just started following them.
TacFlow is on IG. That's right.
Yeah, I don't run any of that. I'm glad I have somebody.
Dude, I tell you what, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, it is. It's a nightmare. It's kind of a time suck. But
so if you had all the people out there listening right now, I mean, we've got a mix of civilian, armed civilians, law enforcement, military guys. I'm sure they've enjoyed hearing what you have to say. If you had 30 seconds to say, this is how you should change your training, whatever that is, what would you say?
It starts with mindset. Mindset's the first thing. I said real quick, I'll make this quick. I don't care how many years you study knife fighting. If a guy with a spoon has the mindset, he'll kill you with a spoon.
Right.
And you know, it's just that, it's that simple. And you gotta build this mindset. Without it, everything else is just a costume.
Perfect. Awesome. Rigo, thanks so much for coming in, man. Appreciate it.
I appreciate
it. That's it. I'm starting the church today. Church of Rigo.
Church of Rigo.
Founded today.
I'll start the paperwork.
I like it.
Get on it.
So we'll come out. We'll check out your facility for sure.
All right.
Looking forward to it again, man. Appreciate you coming down and sharing yourself with us. We appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Remember, we still got people deployed out there too, listeners.
Yeah.
We had a remember that when people come, you know, everyone wants to support people when they're deployed, but then when they come home, it seems like we forget. And me and some of mine lost a guy last week. Ate a bullet. So let's not create permanent solutions, temporary problems out there. Remember, if you guys have issues, you find yourself alone, you think you're alone, you're not alone. But if you think you're alone, please reach out. And for those of you who are strong, reach out. All right, reach out to those around you. I don't care where they served, who they served with, what branch they were in, whatever. Reach out to them. And don't forget that we're not just talking about our military brothers and sisters here. We're talking about our law enforcement brothers and sisters as well. So you know somebody, even fire EMS, anybody who is in a job that's going to require some stress, some pressure, make sure you reach out to them. All right. And if you're strong, reach out. If you're not feeling as strong, please reach out and get help. And you can always, always contact us. You can email us info@trainingaz.com. We will call you. I don't care what time of day it is. I don't care who you are, where you served, what you did, or whatever. If we can't do something for you, we'll definitely find somebody who can. So just remember that. Keep that in mind. Next week, we're going to have Bernie in the studio with us. Bernie Miller, Mason's father.
Oh, my God.
And I'm going to make him explain to us just what in the hell went wrong. No, actually, that's not what we're going to do.
Tune in next week for a boring show about the life of Mason.
Bernie,
be anything but a boring show.
Bernie Miller is actually going to be in here talking to us about the sleep effects or the health effects that sleep has on you. He's also going to be talking to us about how sleep affects post-traumatic stress. Yeah. I'm going to be taking a sleep test with Bernie this week.
What?
That's right.
I thought we were all going to get to do this.
I'm working on it, all right? But we're actually going to take a sleep test with Bernie so he can tell me how awfully I sleep. But I have to go sleep at Mason's house to make it happen.
Yeah. Sleepover!
Yeah,
that's the kicker.
Slumber party. But anyways, so Bernie's going to be kind of telling us the results, hopefully, of that test next week. And he'll be talking to us about the effects that sleep have on our health in general, but also on things like post-traumatic stress. And sleep is amazing. You know, it's something we talk about a lot in our training.
I love sleep.
We talk about you know, how important physical fitness is and all that kind of stuff, how important it is to maintain your number one piece of equipment. Otherwise, no other piece of equipment can function, right? And we talk about that a lot in our training. Sleep is always a big thing we hit. And every time we mention sleep, everyone's like, oh, forget that. I sleep like 5 hours a night, you know? So Bernie's going to be in here, and he's going to be talking to us. And I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Drink caffeine by the gallon on
the
daily
basis. And over here is John drinking his 8th Rockstar, and it's only 11 o'clock in the morning. So well done.
Shameless plug for Rockstar.
Today's show brought to you by Monster Drinks.
I also drink those.
All right, guys. So until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room. We'll be right back.
right here and there. The name of the friend, we are the